The IMF gets new leadership, but is everyone on board?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Good morning. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Now the global perspective. What's happening in business at the intersection of the U.S. and the rest of the world? China said today it supports newly appointed International Monetary Fund Chief Christine Lagarde. The French finance minister was appointed to the position after some jockeying among other countries, including China and Mexico. Simon Johnson is a professor at MIT and former chief economist at the IMF. Hi, Simon.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Do you think the IMF missed an opportunity by appointing a European versus maybe someone from an emerging market?
Yes, I think they did. Ms. Lagarde has some very strong qualifications, but she also has a conflict of interest in that the French government, where she's the finance minister right now, is up to its eyeballs in the Eurozone and Greek mess.
Do you think Lagarde's going to show some sort of favoritism toward Greece because she is a European?
She will show favoritism towards French banks, not towards Greece.
Because the French banks, of course, hold so much of the Greek debt.
The French banks are exposed to Greek debt directly and indirectly. But the big issue is the French banks don't have enough capital. And the French are very worried about what would happen if French banks or German banks or Italian banks were to collapse.
How far in the future do you think we'll know that she was a good choice or a bad choice?
I think you can look out about 2 years, see what happens in Greece, see what happens in the Eurozone. If they really turn the corner, these will be indications of success. But I'm not optimistic.
What about beyond Lagarde's term at the IMF? Do you think the emerging market question will come up again?
It's bound to come up every time that they pick a new managing director, but the emerging markets are not well organized. They don't see themselves as having convergent interests. You should expect Europe to predominate at the IMF for a considerable period of time, and I think that will undermine the legitimacy in the institution around the world.
Simon Johnson, MIT professor, former IMF chief economist. Simon, thanks.
Thank you.
We're going to be reporting on Greece a lot today, the protests in the streets that are getting overheated as we speak, and all in the wake of today's parliamentary vote, the vote going on right now on major budget cutbacks. Now let's continue with how the debt crisis is affecting other countries. In Germany, leaders support a package to help Greece, but on the streets of Berlin, the average German isn't quite so supportive. The BBC's Steve Evans reports.
German taxpayers tightened their belts after the great financial crash. Cuts included lower pay for public workers and fewer hours of paid work. Now the Germans are being asked to pay more than any other country to help bail out Greece. And yet the Greeks are balking at making tough cuts themselves and are lashing out at the Germans. Hans-Olaf Henkel, former head of the Association of German Industry, says the Germans resent the situation.
They share the highest burden for the bailout packages. And on the other hand, they are now the most hated nation. That conflict really disturbs us.
You can see this German anger expressed on the pages of Bild, the country's most widely read newspaper. The newspaper published a poster from the streets of Greece that showed Germany's Chancellor Angela Merkel likened to the Nazis. In Berlin, I'm the BBC's Steve Evans for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. European markets are up 1% or more. Bank of America is close to shelling out $8.5 billion to settle claims by some powerful investors that the bank improperly managed their money in mortgage-backed securities. Among those powerful investors, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. Wall Street yesterday, the Dow surged way more than 1%, 145 points, to close at 12,188.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Allianz, insuring more than 80 million customers worldwide and providing retirement solutions through its affiliated companies in the U.S. AllianzUSA.com. And by Indiana University's Kelley School of Business, providing a personalized approach to career advancement. Learn more at kellei.iu.edu. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Fund, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet.
Texas lawmakers faced a deadline today to pass a state budget, and they did it just in time. The legislature just yesterday hacked off $4 billion from the education budget. In South Carolina, though, there's a different problem. What to do with all their extra revenue? From Station WFAE, Lisa Miller reports.
Last month, South Carolina lawmakers found themselves in an unusual predicament. State economists told them they'd have an extra $210 million to work with in the budget starting Friday.
We certainly haven't had surplus money the last few years. We've had the other problem.
That's Republican State Senator Wes Hayes. He thought it would make sense to use half of the extra money as tax relief for some businesses, and the other half to start making up for past cuts in K-12 education. The state Senate voted to increase per-pupil spending from about $1,600 to nearly $2,000.
Still substantially less than where it was a few years ago, but it would be better.
But 2 weeks ago, Republican Governor Nikki Haley said that wasn't going to fly.
The fact that we had additional money go into the Senate doesn't mean you go and say, oh, where can we spend it and how fast can we spend it? It means that you say, if you're not giving it in tax relief, if you're not giving it to pay down debt, you send it back to the taxpayer.
South Carolina's House agreed to only send $56 million of the extra money to public schools. But even that was too much for Haley. Yesterday, she vetoed the funds. The House votes today on whether to override that veto. One of those watching closely will be Linda Blackwell, an elementary school principal in Lancaster County. Over the past few years, she's had to cut summer school, lay off 5 teachers, and trim workdays for remaining teachers. She says lately, teaching has become much more challenging.
How many desks are in here?
This is 28, and there's 2 more here, so that's 30.
Some classes have swelled by almost a third.
You've got to be everywhere, and you've got to have eyes on everyone, and it's hard to do that if you're on one side of the room and somebody thinks, I'm not going to get called on, and it's going to be a little while before she gets over here.
Whether the extra education money comes through or not, Blackwell is getting ready to prepare her teachers for more of the same next year. I'm Lisa Miller for Marketplace.
And finally, Smithsonian's National Museum of African American History and Culture in Washington is adding about a half dozen items from the popular TV show Soul Train, including the show's 10-foot-long neon sign. That sign is going to be unveiled tomorrow as part of the Smithsonian Folklife Festival on the National Mall. And like the show, it's sure to be the hippest trip in America. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles, online at marketplace.org, and on the web, I should say on Twitter, at Marketplace Radio. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
Business news. It's not all banks, budgets, and bottom lines, you know. At Marketplace, we think it can be lots of things, like...
So maybe you've heard of the Kardashians.
iPhone and iPad apps.
Christian Dior.
Wine.
We Fit.
Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
The NFL.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Whether you need news or the numbers or just a good laugh, join us next time for Marketplace, the business show for the rest of us. It's from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.